In our shiur last week, we spoke about getting into a taxi on Matzai Shabbos when you know that the driver is a chiloni, you know that he is not yet a Shomer Shabbos, and obviously as a result, he has not yet recited Havdalah. And that was a discussion that we had, a lot of fascinating conversations that came up as a result of that, but a follow-up discussion about this kind of topic is something that is also very, very interesting, only relevant to really Eretz Yisrael. You'll understand in a minute why it's not so relevant here in America, but would a rabbi be allowed to be Mesada Kiddushin at a wedding of two unaffiliated Jews on a Sunday evening? And you say to yourself, what can possibly be wrong with being Mesada Kiddushin at a Chasana on a Sunday night? What is wrong? It's not Shabbos. Obviously, it's during the week. And what is the potential problem? Well, here again, we get into a discussion of the fact that the couple has not yet recited Havdalah. And there is a prohibition to eat before reciting Havdalah. So here we are on Sunday night. The Chi of Havdalah is still lingering. If one did not have an opportunity to recite Havdalah on Matzai Shabbos, they're supposed to recite it on Sunday at some point. So they didn't have an opportunity to say Havdalah because they simply don't know about Havdalah. And now the Mesada Kiddushin is giving them wine onto the chuppah, and he is facilitating them doing something wrong. That is actually a fascinating shaila that is discussed by the Gedolei HaPoskim of our generation. And the reason why it's relevant is because in America, usually this doesn't happen. If you have a family that is unaffiliated, they're probably not going to have a rabbi who is Orthodox be the Mesada Kiddushin. But in Eretz Yisrael, at least until now, since every marriage has to go through a certain system, and that system is an Orthodox system, in order for it to go through, it has to be a religious ceremony. So in that situation, you have a Rav, who is going to be called, potentially has no connection at all to the couple that's getting married. They are unaffiliated. He is religious. He's Orthodox. And he wants to know, do I have a right to give them the wine under the chuppah when I know that I am asking them to do something that is against the halacha? The halacha says that they're not allowed to eat or drink before reciting Havdalah. I know for sure that they have not said Havdalah. So imagine you're going to come to this chuppah and the rabbi is going to get under the chuppah and the first thing he's going to do is say Havdalah. That would be a little bit strange. We didn't ask the rabbi to say Havdalah. We asked him to be Mesada Kiddushin. So it's a strange predicament to be in. It's an interesting situation. And that is the question that is discussed. So again, it gets into a very interesting set of halachas. But I think really what it comes to, before we begin that part of the discussion, what it first comes to is the Ramah. So the Ramah in Hilchas Shabbos, Simen Reish, Ayin Aleph, that's Hilchas Kiddush. So there the Ramah says that even though you're not allowed to eat or drink anything before reciting Havdalah, the Ramah says, what happens if somebody mistakenly makes a bracha on food? You know, Matzah Shabbos, for some reason, there's a big craze to have pizza. For the first time in my life, I was on Central Avenue on Matzah Shabbos. Never did it before. I don't think I'll ever do it again. But we had company in the house, and it was a younger group of people who very much wanted pizza. I said, sure, I'll go out and get some pizza. So I go out to Central Avenue. I was amazed by what I saw, by the people that I saw there. I don't think they were thrilled to see me there. And I don't know, the police were out there. There was a whole lot going on. And I finally appreciated when people talk about pizza on Matzah Shabbos. Now I understand how much of an excitement it is. So writes the Ramah, what happens if I have such a craze on Matzah Shabbos? I want to be the first one at the pizza shop. I run the minute davening is over, get in my car before I even go home. I run to the pizza shop, pick up the burning hot, fresh pizza out of the oven, bring it home, wash my hands, eat the pizza, and then realize I didn't make Havdalah. So says the Ramah, back up a step. What happens if you make the bracha and then you realize I didn't make Havdalah? So what am I supposed to do? Says the Ramah, in order that your bracha should not be a bracha levatela, even though you're not allowed to eat before reciting Havdalah, if you already made a bracha, hamotzi lechem in haaretz on the pizza, and then you realize, I forgot to make Havdalah, says the Ramah, you're allowed to take a bite of the pizza, then you go back, you make Havdalah, and you finish up eating your pizza from Alav HaMalka. Of course, everybody who's crazy about pizza is doing it l'shem shamayim, because they all want to have Havdalah, they're mahadah to have it right away. So in such a situation, says the Ramah, that obviously you should take a bite, and then you should go back and recite Havdalah. This is actually a very important shaila that comes up in many different contexts. They're not all necessarily the same, but it's just something, it's a thought-provoking idea, it's something to consider. And it actually came up this Matzah Shabbos. Where was I Matzah Shabbos? I spoke somewhere, I don't even remember where, but they had a big spread of upper crust, which was all milchiks, and I come into the house, and everybody's eating. I turned to one of the people, I said, are you milchiks already? Shabbos is over so early, they have, oh, we were there together, it was on your block. So we came into the house, and it was, I don't know, let's say 6:30, 7 o'clock. Maybe it was later, I don't know. And the meal on Shabbos afternoon is not over until, you know, if you have a lot of company, it could be 2:30, 3 o'clock. And if you wait 6 hours, so you are not going to be milchiks for quite a while. So I turned to one of the people. I said, it's really nice that they have a spread like this, but I'm sure many of the people in this room are probably not even milchiks yet. So this is actually a fascinating question. Somebody who I said this to actually had just made a bracha on the food that was on his plate. I did not realize. And I said to him, is everybody milchiks yet? And he says, no, I'm not. And then he says, what do I do now? So this is the same kind of question that the Ramah discusses. And whenever you have a dilemma, whenever you have a halachic impasse, you need to ask yourself, what are the two sides? What are the consequences of doing this? What are the consequences of doing that? And that's how you make the decision. So let's try to break this down. Let's try to understand. Number one, we've all heard of the concept of a bracha she'ena tzricha. Bracha she'ena tzricha means you make a bracha that was not necessary to be made. Is that the same? We have an issur in the Torah called Losisa Shem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. You're not allowed to flippantly say the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're not allowed to carelessly throw around the name of God. If we're so serious about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we take it with such a sense of seriousness in all that we do, then you can't just say HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name for no good reason. And that is why we have an issur in the Torah, L'sisa Shem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. You're not allowed to say it just in vain. Would this be the same if I say a bracha she'ena tzricha? Let's say I drink a cup of soda, which I shouldn't be drinking anyway, it's not healthy, but let's say I do, and then I go ahead a few minutes later and I realize I want a cup of soda, so I take a cup and I make another bracha. And then I realize, one second, I just made a bracha. What was the point of making another one? I really didn't have to. That's a bracha she'ena tzricha. There was no reason to make the second one. I'm just not paying attention. This is what I do every time I pick up a cup of water, a cup of soda, I make a bracha. Maybe I don't think about it. That is a bracha she'ena tzricha. So we have a Gemara Maseches Brachas which writes, Kala mevarach bracha she'ena tzricha, over mishum lo sisa. The Gemara says, somebody who makes a bracha she'ena tzricha, you make that second shahakal on a second cup of soda that you did not have to make the bracha on. The Gemara says you have violated the iser of lo sisa shem Hashem elokecha lashav. Many Rishonim understand that at face value. And they say, look, if you cared enough about the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you took it seriously enough, you would think before you made a bracha also. You would think, do I really need to make this bracha or not? And if I did not think, it means I violated lo sisa because I'm not being careful enough the way I should be. Other Rishonim say that that is an exaggeration. You cannot say that somebody who makes a bracha she'ena tzricha, they have good intention in mind. They're not flippantly saying the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're saying the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because they think they have to make a bracha. Now, it happens to be they're not paying enough attention. They're not remembering that they made one 5 minutes ago. But I'm not doing this lashav. I'm not doing this because I don't care about the Ribono Shel Olam. I'm doing it because I'm simply not paying enough attention. In such a case, the Rishonim say, maybe this is not to be taken literally. It's not an Isur D'Oraisa of Losis Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. This is a separate prohibition. We have times in our lives when we're supposed to make brachos. We have times in our lives when we're not supposed to make brachos. Okay, you mistakenly made a bracha that you shouldn't have made. Maybe that's only a rabbinic prohibition. It's only an Isur D'Rabbanim. That being the case, you have to ask yourself, what is the bottom line? Is this an Isur D'Oraisa or an Isur D'Rabbanim? So what happens, for example, if it's a tinus? I get this question every single time we have a public fast day. People are addicted to their coffee and they wake up in the morning without even thinking. And they go and they make themselves a cup of coffee and they start drinking and then they say, oh, I forgot, today's Asar B'Tevis, today's Tisha B'Av. Today, Tisha B'Av, usually not, I hope not. Today is Yom Kippur, usually not either. If you've already made your coffee on Yom Kippur, you're strike two because you cooked the coffee, now you're drinking it. So I get this question really all the time, Tainus Esther, Asar B'Tevis. There is no fast at night. It's not like we went to sleep and we were already thinking about this. The fast starts in the morning. People wake up, and this is their natural thing to do. They wake up in the morning, make themselves a coffee, they make a bracha on the coffee, and then they say, oh, I forgot. Am I supposed to drink this? Am I not allowed to drink it? I already made a bracha on it. Or, if they already drank part of it, they say, okay, the fast is over. I already broke the fast. It's only 5:30 in the morning, and I already broke it, so I'm off for the day. That is a common misconception. You're not off for the day. If you made a mistake and you drank, you should continue to fast. But the question here becomes, what if I make the bracha and realize, after making the bracha, that I have to go ahead and continue on with the fast. So what should I do? Should I drink a little bit in order that my bracha should be valid, it should go on something, or would you say, no, by drinking a little bit, I am now invalidating the tainus? So which one is the better choice? This is a major discussion in the Shari Tshuva. Shari Tshuva is on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, where he discusses this very case, and he quotes the Rebbe of the Chida. Chida himself was a great Svardik Gadol, the Birkei Yosef, he wrote many, many Svarim. But the Rebbe of the Chida, I imagine, was also a great Talmud Chacham. And his sefer is one that is not well known at all. It's called Nechta Bakesef, by a great Talmud Chacham whose name was Rabbi Yonah Navon. So the only reason why we know him is because he was the Rebbe of the Chida, and the Chida quotes his Rebbe. But otherwise, nobody ever looks in the sefer. The Shari Tshuva does quote it here, and he says the Rebbe of the Chida came up with an idea, and that is, take a little sip. You have to make a bracha even if you have a minimal amount of hana. Even if I'm about to have something very minimal, I have to make a bracha regardless. And therefore, he said, how much do you need to drink on a tainus in order to break it? A revius, a kezias, a kebetza, something like that. If I'm just going to drink a drop after making the bracha, I have not broken the tainus, and I have also not invalidated the bracha. That's his idea, and that's what he suggests. The problem that many other achronim have on that is the fact that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos, what if somebody is on a fast day and they are preparing dinner? And along the way, they're making a soup, and they want to make sure that the soup tastes good. So they stick a spoon into the soup, and they want to take a taste of it to make sure there's enough salt, there's enough pepper, whatever it is that they want to put in. So what happens in a situation like that when it's a fast day? What am I supposed to do? So the Gemara says, you're allowed to put it into your mouth and spit it out. Why do you have to spit it out? Why can't I swallow it? If you just told me that you're not breaking a fast day by swallowing a little bit, so then why wouldn't I be able to swallow it? Why does the Gemara say that a woman or a man who is preparing some kind of dish is allowed to taste it, but then has to be polite, then has to spit it out? Why would he have to spit it out? What's the reason for that? So this is a big dispute. It comes to our discussion here as well, and the Rama says, what happens if I realize I didn't make Havdalah, and then I make a bracha on the pizza? After I made the bracha, I realized that I forgot to make Havdalah. So what am I supposed to do? Writes the Rama, when you're weighing those two options, either the Isser of eating before Havdalah, or the prohibition of making a bracha she'ena tzricha in a situation like that, says the Rama, the better of the two evils is that you should eat before making Havdalah, and you should forego that Isser in place of the more chamer, the major problem that we discussed. So the Stechemet talks about the issue that I had last week by the Malava Malka, and that is, what if a person makes a bracha and then they realize that within 6 hours, and they really are not able to do that? So this is, again, very, very interesting, very important questions that you have to think about. The question is the conclusion of all of these cases going to be the same, or perhaps it's going to be different? All of that leads us to the major question of the evening, and that is, what happens when you have a wedding on Sunday evening? So as we mentioned, you're not allowed to eat before making Havdalah. That is clear. Everybody agrees that eating before making Havdalah would be a prohibition. That is an Isser Midirabbanan. So you're not allowed to eat before Havdalah. Now I have an unaffiliated couple getting married on a Sunday evening. I was asked to be the Masada Kedushin. When I originally saw the Shaila and the Tshuva Svarim, I was wondering, you know, isn't it strange to be invited to be Masada Kedushin at a wedding when you don't even know the couple? You never met the Chasan or the Kala. Maybe you met them for a few minutes, but you have no personal connection. I was thinking that to myself until this week. I got an email from a couple in Florida. I never heard of them. Don't know who they are. And they said, we know you're a rabbi in Long Island. We've heard your shiurim here and there. And we met you at APAC. The last time I was at APAC was 8 years ago, so I'm not sure what impression I made on them. I don't know what I said. But they said, we're getting married in the West Hampton somewhere on June 20-something. You know, it's this calendaric year. But they have a plan to get married in June. And they said, we would love for you to be the Masada Kedushin at our wedding. It was literally, as I was looking into this shaila, I'm thinking to myself, who would ever invite a Masada Kedushin that they don't even know? I guess some people do that. They invite a Masada Kedushin who they don't have any connection to. So it's a good question. I don't even know how far this place is in the Hamptons. I have to figure it out. But anyway, so here, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach discusses, no, I did not respond yet. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, and if they're listening to the shiur, you should know you're going to get a response. So Rav Shlomo Zalman writes that if you have a couple who is getting married on a Sunday evening, and it's an Orthodox rabbi who was asked to be Masada Kedushin, so he says, how am I able to be Masada Kedushin when I know that I am facilitating them to eat and drink before making Havdalah? I shouldn't be allowed to do that. Maybe I should turn down the Siddu Kedushin. Well, if I turn down the Siddu Kedushin, they're not going to get married Kahalacha. So what good is that? So which one's better, which one's worse? Shlomo Zalman Auerbach comes up with a tremendous chiddush, and that is the following. He says, the only time there's a prohibition to eat before Havdalah is when we're dealing with somebody who has intention to make Havdalah at some point. So Chazal wanted to make some kind of deterrent. They didn't want me to forget about making Havdalah. I'm otherwise a person who is Orthodox. I make Havdalah all the time, every week. I always do what I'm supposed to do. I may get so carried away with my pizza that I'm not going to remember to make Havdalah. So Chazal said, you know what? We're going to put an Isser in the way that will be a deterrent. We're going to say, you're not allowed to eat anything before reciting Havdalah. This way, you're going to be held back from doing something that you shouldn't do, which could ultimately make you forget about your obligation of Havdalah. But says Rav Shlomo Zalman, let's say you have somebody who has no intention at all of making Havdalah. In such a case, what's the reason to put an Isser Achila before Havdalah? Havdalah is irrelevant to them. If they're not going to make Havdalah, why would you say that you're not allowed to eat before the Havdalah? It's irrelevant. So to those people, it's tremendous chiddush. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, you have a kula by being a chiloni. If you're an Orthodox person, not only do we say you have an obligation to make Havdalah, which is shared by everyone, but we say you have an isser to eat before Havdalah. But if you're somebody who has no intention of making Havdalah, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, that means if you have no plan to make Havdalah in the first place, then there's no isser to eat before Havdalah. It's not relevant to you. I thought that was such a tremendous chiddush. And he's coming up to this because he was backed against the corner. And he says, so many times in my life, I was asked to be Mesada Kedushin at a wedding. I couldn't figure out, what is the heter? How am I allowed to be Mesada Kedushin at a wedding when I'm asking the couple to drink, and therefore I'm giving them something that they're not allowed to do? That was what he was stuck with. And as a result of that, he came up with this really unbelievable chiddush that we would assume that as long as you have no intention to make Havdalah, the whole Isser Achila before Havdalah would not apply to you at all. I think it's an amazing chiddush, but I would say there's an example. There's a case that I think really brings it home. And that is, let's say, Rahmana Litzlan, you have somebody who loses a family member over a Shabbos. So the Levaya is not going to be Matzai Shabbos because we need time to get everything in order, to get the family members together, to plan for a Levaya. Let's say the Levaya is going to be Sunday morning. So what do they do about Havdalah? Obviously on Matzai Shabbos, the family are all considered to be Onanim. They're not allowed to observe mitzvahs. Rashi writes in one place, it's actually a stira in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Chaim writes one thing, Shulchan Aruch in Yerudea writes something else. Am I allowed to volunteer to do a mitzvah when I'm in Aninus, Rachmana Litzlan? So we know that an Onan does not have an obligation to do a mitzvah. But let's say he decides, you know, I'm a good Jew, I want to daven anyway. Even though I'm not obligated, I want to daven, I want to say Kriya Shema, I want to put on tefillin, I want to make a bracha. So we paskin that you're not allowed to. Your focus is supposed to be solely on the mitzvah at hand, and that is to do whatever it takes to help this person have a proper kavod ames. And therefore, we don't want you to be distracted davening. We don't want you to be distracted when you're benching and when you're making brachos and doing everything else. You should be solely focused, and you're not even allowed to volunteer to do a mitzvah. The problem then becomes, what do you do about Havdalah? When should Havdalah be recited? It happens to be a four-way dispute among the Rishonim. What do you do about Havdalah? Should you make Havdalah? Actually, my father always tells over the story how my mother's father, his father-in-law, passed away on a Shabbos afternoon. I think, something like that. And he was in the hospital, or maybe it was on a Sunday, but he was already thinking, because they saw it was almost at the end, he was thinking, what are we going to do about Havdalah? Now, it wasn't relevant to him, because he was not becoming an Onin, it was my mother. And he wasn't sure what to do, and he had no svarim with him in the hospital, and he just said, he was thinking to himself, what would be the right thing to do? And my father said, just thinking about it on his own, he thought the proper way to go would be to make Havdalah on Shabbos afternoon after Plaga Mincha, which is a jarring psak, if you think about it. How can you make Havdalah on Shabbos afternoon? Happens to be, forget about the fact that some Rishonim do say that that's what you should do. It's relevant to all of us because every so often you have Tisha B'Av on Matzis Shabbos and we have the same problem. What do? Some Rishonim say you make Havdalah on Shabbos afternoon. How can you make Havdalah Shabbos afternoon? It's Shabbos afternoon. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, if you have a major Shas Hadchak, for example, somebody's rushing out right after Shabbos to go, whatever, some real emergency, not a fake emergency, a real emergency that's coming up. A doctor knows he's going to have to be on call the minute Shabbos is over. He's not going to be around. He won't have any wine with him. He has to make Havdalah. In such a case, the Shulchan Aruch writes, you're allowed to make Havdalah on Shabbos afternoon if you know that there's going to be a major Shas Hadchak right after Shabbos is over. So my father said, is there a greater Shas Hadchak than this? I'm going to be an Onin the minute Shabbos is over. I'm not going to be able to make Havdalah. Is there anything that's a greater Shas Hadchak than that? Anyway, that's one opinion in the Rishonim. It happens to be the Ashkenazic Achronim do not accept that answer. But again, when you have somebody who becomes an Onin on Matzei Shabbos, when would they make Havdalah? So they make Havdalah after the Levaya on Sunday. So do you say they're not allowed to eat anything? The whole Matzah Shabbos, the whole Sunday morning, they're not allowed to eat or drink anything? Of course they're allowed to. How are they allowed to? You're not allowed to eat before Havdalah. The answer is, they have no intention of making Havdalah, because they're not allowed to make Havdalah right now. In such a case, maybe this would be an example of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's Chiddush that he mentions here with regard to the Chiloni and serving them something to drink before they have made Havdalah. You know, it comes to a question that Shifra asked last week, but she's not here. But she asked a very important question, and that is, if I'm on a team, and this is a very similar question. I spoke to Rav Asher Weiss once. He said that he had a mifaked, he had a commanding officer in the army who was a religious Jew. And it's the job of the mifaked to do many different things, but one of his jobs is he determines, you know, not every soldier works every day of the week. You give them off. I don't know how many days a week they give them off. Let's say it's one day a week that they have the opportunity to go back home and come back. So he wanted to know, does he have a right, when he's making the schedule, does he have a right to send a chiloni home for Shabbos? Why not? Because after all, if he's in the army over Shabbos, of course he's going to be doing malacha, but all the malachas that he's going to be doing are heter, because he's doing it for the sake of saving the Jewish people. So if I keep him here on the base over Shabbos, then the assumption is going to be that every malacha, not everything, obviously when he's playing on his phone, that's his thing, but any other malacha that he's doing is going to be something that's part of the general army service. So that really would not be a malacha at all. If I send him home for Shabbos, he's going to be doing all kinds of malachas that have no heter at all. So when I'm making the schedule and I'm the commanding officer, do I have a right to place him in a situation where I know that by making the schedule in this way, it's going to cause him to be mechal Shabbos, whereas if he stayed behind, he would not be mechal Shabbos at all, because any malacha that he would be doing would be for the sake of the effort of the army. Would I have a right to do that? And it really speaks to her question. Her question was that she's in a company where they have somebody always has to be on call to answer tech support. So they make a schedule. So obviously they're going to be respectful of the fact that I'm a religious Jew, and they're not going to make me take a Shabbos shift. They're going to make me take a Sunday night or a Monday night shift. I have to chip in like everybody else has to. I have to do my time. But the question then became, when I'm switching shifts with somebody else, if I'm going to switch with a Jew who's not religious, am I now causing them to be Mechal Shabbos? Do I have to look into that before I switch with another business partner? Do I have to ask them, well, are you Jewish? Are you religious? Are you going to keep Shabbos? Are you not going to keep Shabbos? Your mother's Jewish? Your father's Jewish? What's the story? You're really Jewish? You're not? So are these questions that I need to ask? I assume in a work setting, we don't always ask personal questions like that about, you know, about our friends and our colleagues and our neighbors and the people who we work with. It's not always an appropriate way to have conversations with them. So is this something I would be obligated to think about? Is this something that is my problem? Or perhaps do you say that not my problem at all? Because after all, the story really is that they're going to be Mechal Shabbos regardless. If they're not answering the phones for the company when somebody calls that they need some tech support, they're going to be watching TV and they're going to be playing on their phone and driving to the store and doing all kinds of other malachos anyway. So is that my problem that I need to worry about it? The fact that now they're going to be doing malacha for the company? What's the difference? They would be doing malacha for someone else, or they're going to be doing malacha for this? Is that something that I need to keep in mind? Is it something I need to worry about? Again, a very, very interesting question, but it really gets to this issue. We have a world where we interact with so many different types of people. As we spoke a couple of weeks ago, we interact with non-Jews. They give us gifts sometimes. We have to figure out what to do with those gifts. The Surei Hana. I was just listening to something recently. My wife sent me a great discussion from one of the Rabbanim in Lakewood, who was talking about just basic business ethics, different things that you have to keep in mind. It was a really terrific discussion. He's a great Talmud Chacham. Rabbi Kushner is his name, and he wrote a number of svarim. He's part of the Beis Havad in Lakewood. He wrote a number of svarim about business and halacha and different things that people need to be aware of. And he mentioned the story that there was somebody who's an Alta Yid from Europe, and he came to America many years ago, and he came up with this business where he provides the hotel industry with all of the different items that are in the rooms. I forgot what that's called. Sorry? The amenities? No. With the drinks and all the different things. What? Hospitality, thank you. So it's his job to stock them up, and he has a big contract with major hotels. And he was once talking to this Rabbi Kushner about the details of his business, and Rabbi Kushner said, he threw it out as he was discussing with him. He said, "You don't sell wine there, do you?" He said, "Of course I sell wine." So he said, "What do you mean you sell wine? It's a kosher wine?" So he said, "No, it's non-kosher wine." I don't sell. Why would I sell kosher wine? Nobody in this hotel is Jewish. Why would they want kosher wine? He says, you're not allowed to sell non-kosher wine. He said, no, I'm not selling it to a Jew. There's no Jew coming to this hotel. This is a hotel out in who knows where. And the guests are not Jewish at all. What do I care if the wine is kosher or not? He says, no. In Shulchan Aruch it says, you're not allowed to sell non-kosher wine because you're getting hana from wine that's maybe stam yenam. He said, it never dawned on this man, and the guy couldn't wrap his head around it. He said, what are you talking about? How is it possible? There's nothing wrong with the wine. The wine is not kosher. I'm not selling it to Jews. I'm selling it to non-Jews. What do I have to worry? So you have to be aware of the fact, now that we have a very complicated world and we interact with all kinds of different people, Jews and non-Jews alike, some of them are religious, some of them are non-religious. It's something that we need to think about because there are so many different obstacles that we could potentially face in so many different ways. And it's an opportunity for us just to be mindful of it, just to think about the questions at least. Not always is there going to be an answer in our own heads that we can formulate, but something at least to think about the questions and make ourselves a little bit more sensitive to some of the potential questions that may really arise from whatever it is, the interaction that we happen to be involved with. So again, just to remind everybody,